Excuse me, is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you for pressing play.
Welcome.
We appreciate you guys being here with us today. We're here with Dr. Kim Callwood today. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Awesome. How are you doing?
Good, good.
Oh, we're doing well.
Yeah,
awesome.
Really appreciate you making the time to be with us here today. So let me ask you a quick question to get started. Take us back to medical school. What was your toughest class or rotation in medical school?
Well, my toughest class in medical school was pharmacology. Mm-hmm. And because with pharmacology, that was like in my second year. And then I think in your second year, you're supposed to take like national boards part one.
Correct.
And I couldn't do both. It was just impossible. It wasn't going to happen. But I was fortunate enough to make the brilliant choice of going to Tulane Medical School. And at that time, at Tulane in Louisiana and Texas, the students had a choice to do national boards or something called the FLEX.
The FLEX?
So the FLEX exam was taken at the end of medical school after you graduated, or you took national boards. So that was my decision. It's like, I'm going to complete pharmacology. Then after medical school is over, I'm going to take the FLEX exam. And it is a, you know, it is the same as the, it was seen in Louisiana and Texas, you were allowed to take the FLEX.
Oh,
and nationally, it was seen as the same as national boards.
Oh, that's so funny. You know, I remember like when we like fill out, you know, our like, you know, medical applications for like medical licenses in states, you know, they always ask, do you take the USMLEs or do you take the FLEX exam? So I thought the FLEX was like a foreign medical school, you know, school examination, but that's so interesting. So it was actual an American examination you could take at the end of medical school.
Yes, yes. And so because it was taking at the end, you know, you've graduated, you know, your exams are done, blah, blah, blah. So you're a doctor. So now all you have to do is pass the FLEX.
Yeah.
Oh, that's,
you know, and they stopped the FLEX. I don't know when they ended the, they did end the option of taking the FLEX or the national board. So it's no longer an option, but when I went through medical school, it was an option, and that was the option that I took.
Oh, that's
so nice. Because pharmacology, for some reason, was so difficult for me, it gave me an easy out.
Yeah,
so
well, that's, I mean,
so
it's,
I did
it's
not,
not
I didn't, I didn't take.
I'm sure it's not an easy out, but it's nice that you were able to do the research and figure out, you know, a way around something that was going to be difficult for you. So that's
right.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's so good.
Absolutely. I mean, what seems like a great way to like learn what you need to learn, and then at the end you knock it out, and then you know you're certified.
No, that makes sense.
Right.
There's
right.
so much stress associated with like all these exams that you're taking, so it's nice to like, you know, because I remember like during second year, third year, you know, you're like kind of studying for like, you know, your medical school exams, but then in the back of your head, you're like, gotta get ready for step one. So it's like you're kind of doing like double studying, and it's kind of a hassle, because then like all the, you know, sometimes the questions that you get in medical school and the tests aren't like reflecting like what's going to be on step one, and that's just frustrating as well. So that's really good that you like were able to figure that out and make that happen.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, that's one of the reasons why I chose Tulane. Tulane was actually my first choice.
Okay.
Because there were a bunch of students that went to GW with me that went to Tulane, and they were doing great.
Oh,
and Tulane was committed to graduating their students.
Nice.
So when I went to the interview, they're like, look, if you have to take off, if you have to stop and come back, if you have any kind of drama at all, and you cannot finish this year or in your class, you do what you got to do. Come back and you'll fall into the next class and graduate.
Oh,
so I think it's important that when you're choosing a medical school, you want to choose a medical school that is committed to making sure that you're successful and you make it through. 100%. So there were students in my class that didn't start with me. They were in classes ahead of me and dropped out, either got married or, you know, whatever drama happened. They dropped for a couple of years.
Life happens.
And then they came back and picked it up and graduated. Absolutely. So, you know, you got to really pick the school that is committed to you.
You got to go support it.
You got to support it.
At every step in the process. Absolutely.
Yes. And that's another reason why I chose Tulane, because when I went to the interview, you know, they had a very strong African-American support system.
Oh, that's nice. Right.
You know, they had like old exams, and they're like, anything you need, you want us to go to the growth lab with you. You want us to do your cadaver with you. We are here.
Oh, that's so great.
So
that's so great.
And that, along with the fact that I didn't have to deal with the winter, because I'm originally from the Virgin Islands.
Oh, really?
So that was a big thing for me too. Like, oh, I'm in medical school and I have to deal with the winter. No.
Oh, no.
So it's much warmer down in New Orleans. I was like, this is perfect. This is just perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, and then when you
made a good
test,
decision.
Yeah, there's a place to party.
Yeah. It was, you know, my medical school years were so precious because, you know, I was there pre-Katrina, and I was able to really experience the culture of New Orleans, like the way it was back in the day. Because after Katrina, you know, New Orleans has completely changed.
It is not the same.
Know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I had the opportunity to as a medical student, you know, do rotations at Charity Hospital, which is like the poorest hospital, is like Grady Hospital in Atlanta.
Right.
But it was like such an awesome place as a student. You know, I just have so many fond memories of medical school, you know.
I'm sure that you do everything at charity too.
Oh, yeah. You've delivered the babies.
Oh, nice.
And you know, charity back then, back in the day, you know, there was no HIPAA. Okay.
So
you had this big room and you had like 20 patients and everybody was separated by a curtain. So like if you were doing surgery, you know, you come in at 4 o'clock in the morning and, you know, see your patient, get your labs. And then at 5 o'clock, you'd round with the intern. And then at 6 o'clock, you'd round with the first year. And at 7 o'clock, you round with the third year and the chief resident, and then like at 8 o'clock you'd round with the attending. So by the time 8 o'clock happened, everybody in the room knew what everybody else had.
I had heard the story over and over again.
Oh, that's so good. Hey, repetition is key.
There you go.
It was just an awesome place. It really was.
That's great.
How did you find out about Tulane? You said you met some folks that had done well and they talked Tulane up. So how did you meet those people?
So they were students at GW because I went to GW undergrad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I see.
There were some students at GW. So at GW, I was very aggressive. And so at GW, I was like, we formed this pre-med organization called the Charles R. Drew Pre-Med Society.
Nice.
I was the president.
Oh, that's
so cool. I was out there meeting different students and going down to Howard and talking to the admissions and having people come and talk to us about getting into medical school and what it's like and such and whatever.
Oh, that's incredible.
And there were some students at GW that were ahead of me that ended up going to Tulane, and you know, they were like, their experiences were great and they did well. So I said, well, I got through GW. If they can get through Tulane, then I can get through Tulane.
Oh, that's so.
And then all the other reasons, like I said, it was warmer down there. When I went to the interview, it, you know, New Orleans back in the day was like a different world, you know. You know, it was just different.
Yeah.
And everybody was so warm and welcoming and so supportive. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is where I want to go. So when I got into Tulane, I got into a couple of schools mm-hmm. ahead of Tulane that I just waitlisted them because I wanted to go to Tulane.
Oh, that's
you
so
know,
good.
The commitment that the school had to its students, the option to take the flex.
Wow.
And Tulane also at that time had a pre-med, I didn't do their pre-med program, but they had a pre-med program for minority students, like wow. the summer before getting into medical school, where you took like some medical school classes.
Okay.
And, you know, so typically if you got into that program and did well, you knew that you could get into Tulane. So actually, I was the only student that got into Tulane that didn't go through that program.
Like African Americans.
So when I got there my freshman year, all the kids knew each other, at least all the minorities knew each other because they had gone through the MedRep program.
Gotcha.
I didn't go through MedRep, but I still got in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they welcomed me. It was just like awesome. I mean, it was hard. It was very, very hard. But it was such a good experience.
Absolutely. I think if you have the support of like your friends and people that you're able to get along with and the staff that's there and knowing that they have a pipeline that's already been created with people coming from GW and then also, you know, people at the Med Prep program that were at Tulane. I mean, that's community. You just basically drop yourselves
yeah.
right into the community. And that's Well, that's so important. And I'm sure you probably got into schools that may have been like more highly rated, you know, on the scales, I guess. But, you know, you just sometimes you have to make a decision based on, you know, where you're going to be comfortable, where you feel like you're going to be able to succeed. So that's great. That's so good that you were able to be brave enough to make that decision. So that's great.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You have to go where you think you can get through and get out.
Exactly.
There you
okay,
go.
The whole issue of, you know, unless you're going to do like it. Oh, that was another reason why I went to Tulane. I also went to Tulane because they had a dual degree program.
Oh, okay.
So Tulane had a bunch of dual degrees. So you can get an MD, MPH. Oh, and
which
so
you was, have.
Which I have, yes. So
So
instead of doing electives, you would go over to the public health school. And they set up an entire program just for the medical students that wanted to get the MPH.
Oh,
so for an extra $5,000, I got a master's degree in public health
wow.
with no additional time. With no additional time.
Wow! So also in 4 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's
so. Good. That was another reason why I went to Tulane. It was just awesome.
many reasons. So. So what year, can you take us back? What year was this when you created that Drew Foundation at GW or the Drew?
I'm going to age myself, but that's okay. It was, I graduated from high school in 1980.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was at GW from 80 to 84. So we probably did that either 82 or 83.
Wow.
Okay.
That's
incredible. And this is like this is something that did not exist before. Wow.
Yeah.
No, we, because there were no minority pre-med clubs.
Yeah.
And GW had quite a few pre-med students. And I have friends now that are physicians that went to GW with me.
I see.
You know, so we started this organization, and you know, they gave us like a little $500 stipend, and I was off and running.
That's all it took.
There you go. Yeah, you said you were aggressive. I had a question about why you chose to get an MPH.
Well, because I wasn't committed to doing direct patient care. Mm. And fortunately, okay. I knew that early. and I wanted to always give myself a back pocket
right.
and a plan B just in case I got into something that I absolutely hated, and, you know, administration potentially could be an option. And then I also, you know, like the concept of global medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was very interested in what I was being taught, except, you know, the whole biostatistics and epidemiology. That was a hard course. I didn't like that. But everything else was just so interesting to me. So I said, I'm going to get this MPH. It's only $5,000. That could be any extra time. And I may use it down the road at some point. I never did, but I'm glad I did it. And if I had to do it over again, I would still do it.
Wow.
Very smart.
That's amazing. So can you tell us more about the Caribbean and where you're from?
What about?
Well, tell us.
I'm from St. Thomas, Virgin Islands.
All right.
And there was no one else in my family that was a physician. And I've always liked science. So by high school, I knew I wanted to go to medical school.
You already had it in your mind. Okay.
I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I was going to go to medical school. So,
gotcha. Okay. And how did you transition from there to DC at GW?
So my older brother went to GW.
Oh, okay.
So he graduated in 79, and I got there in 80.
Gotcha.
So he was still milling around when I got there. So he kind of oriented me when I got on campus, you know, because my mom is from Williamsburg, Virginia, and my father's from the Virgin Islands. They met when my father was at Hampton Institute.
Oh,
okay.
And then he took her down to the Virgin Islands. So we would spend our summers in Williamsburg, Virginia, as kids with my grandparents. Yeah. So I was exposed to being up in the United States, mm-hmm. like four months out of the year. So that was not a transition. But when I went to GW, my brother was still around and he still had friends. So he's like, "This is my little sister.
Watch out for her. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. They dropped you right in the middle of Chocolate City. That's so good. It kind of feels like, I was going to say, it sounds like you went from like DC, which is Chocolate City, to like an even more chocolatey city down in New Orleans.
What, in New Orleans?
Yes.
Yeah, it's too late.
Yeah. I have had I have been blessed that my road my professional road has been so positive. You know, I haven't had a lot of issues. It's pretty much smooth sailing, but it takes planning.
Yeah.
You know, it takes planning, and it takes, you know, you have to know yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to know yourself. And I you know, when I was at PG Hospital, we would have students from the Caribbean rotate through radiology. That's and right. I was the one in charge of them. And I really taught, we did some radiology, but I took that opportunity to talk to them about life, you know, and the profession for real, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, what to expect, you know, and to know yourself, because this is something you're going to be doing for the rest of your life. And you have to still love it at 50 or 60 years old. And mm-hmm. I still love radiology.
Oh, that's so good.
That's great. You know, yeah.
I still love radiology. And looking back, you know, I still would have done each step exactly the same.
Oh, that's great.
So I have been fortunate and blessed that my road has been straight. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It hasn't been easy necessarily, but it was enjoyable. You know, it was positive, and you know, I still enjoy radiology. You know, and I think radiologists, for the most part, if you probably did a survey, we probably have higher job satisfaction than a lot of other specialties, you know?
Correct.
I buy that for sure. One thing I've noticed that you said, Dr. Paul, was, and things that I've sort of grabbed onto is that you said if others can do it, then many others that were before you could do it, then I know I can do it. And to me, that speaks to the confidence that you had, the drive that you had, and you weren't going to let anybody stop you. You also said that you were aggressive. You looked for community. And you weren't afraid to try different things. Mm-hmm. And planning was key on your path. So I just wanted to take a minute and give you, you know, some props for those things that you did. And for our listeners who are looking to find their way and on this journey, those are some gems. Those are things to do.
Important, very important.
Absolutely.
Choice.
I mean, you know, you have to, when you decide what you think you want to do, it has to become a non-negotiable. It has to almost become like your DNA. It's like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I don't care what y'all are doing, but this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Okay. It has to be, you know, it has to be that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then your thought process, what you do, how you do it will all fall into place because now you have decided, no, this is what I'm going to do. I've decided. I didn't decide being a radiologist until I was a second year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was a second year at Tulane. And I remember this clear as day. There was a lounge, student lounge, and the kids used to spend time in the student lounge watching soaps and that kind of stuff. And I was like, I thought I was going to do ophthalmology. And then all the guys in ophthalmology at Tulane were assholes. And so I can't be an ophthalmologist. And I was like, what am I going to do? And so this upperclassman, I think he was either third or fourth year, and I was like, I know what I don't want to do, but I don't know what I want to do. He says, why don't you just be a radiologist? A radiologist? What does a radiologist do?
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, nobody knew what radiologists did.
People still don't know what radiologists do.
I know they still don't. Like, you take the X-rays? No, ma'am, I don't.
No. That's so true.
That's so true.
So he said, listen, you have a great life as a radiologist. He said, wow. You know everything about everything. It's very broad radiology, but you'll have a great life. Very interesting. And I said, oh, okay. I'll be radiologist then. So that was just a blessing because trust me, I thank the Lord every day that I'm a radiologist.
Do you remember this person who told you this? Like, do you remember?
I don't remember who it was, but he was maybe in the, for real. He was a third or fourth year, and he was like, no radiology. You know, I had no idea that radiology was kind of semi-competitive. And so, you know, in your third year, you're doing your rotations, and then in your fourth year, you start doing your electives. So I did an elective at Howard in radiology, and then I drove down to Baylor and did an elective there. Mm-hmm. And then, Emory. I went from Howard to Emory and then down to Baylor.
It's a lot of driving.
And did rotations there. And but I wanted to go to Howard because, you know, Howard still had their residency program at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into Howard, you know, and Howard was not in the match. So I kind of had to wait until the near end of my freshman, my internship year to know that I actually got in to Howard for residency.
Wow.
You know, and that was a blessing, you know. So, my journey has been very, very good. I have no complaints about my journey.
That's so good.
But like I said, you have to know yourself. You know, I had one time I went to a party and there was a young lady there
All right.
And at the end of the party, they're like, oh, what do you want to do? Do you want to be a doctor? Oh, you need to talk to Dr. Caldwell. Talk to her about, you know, what you want to do. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this young lady, beautiful young lady, she was Gucci down.
Gucci down to the
top. She was Gucci down. And she said she wanted to be a pediatrician. I said, girl, how are you going to be a pediatrician and you Gucci down? The first time that baby throws up on those Gucci shoes, they're like, I'm out.
You're done.
I said, that's what you're presenting to me does not fit the lifestyle of a pediatrician.
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay, just on the surface, it doesn't. You look like a dermatologist. Quite frankly, okay, so it's important that you look in the mirror and know it's okay. You may just want to come into medicine because you want to make $1 million. Cool, but don't front.
Yeah, keep it a front.
You know, pediatrics. No, I don't see you as a pediatrician. No, I don't, because that's not what, you know, first of all, they're not going to make enough for you to support the $1,000 boots you got on.
Mm-hmm. And the kids are going to throw up on it.
Oh, man.
So I tell the young people, know yourself, whatever specialty you choose.
So important.
Whatever specialty you choose, know yourself, know how you want to live. I mean, I'm talking down to the, you know, the car, you know, the house, you know, do you want to travel? Do you want to have time off? Do you want to have flexibility? You know, do you want to see patients? What feeds your ego?
Exactly.
Hey.
What feeds you? What feeds your ego? What makes you feel like you've accomplished something at the end of the day?
That's so important.
How did you help this person? How did you help the people that you touched at the end of the day? Mm. You know, radiology isn't for everybody.
No,
you know,
it's not. No, you definitely
internal medicine is not for everybody. I just was fortunate. I knew a lot of what I didn't want to do. And fortunately, I followed, you know, some direction and looked into radiology, and it happened to be something that I ended up loving, and I still love it after 30 years. You know, it's like being a anatomic detective. Every person that you're presented, they are a mystery, and you have to figure out the mystery.
Right.
Each and every one of them. You know,
and people counting on you to do it too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And you are key and integral.
Mm-hmm.
And every patient that's in that hospital, okay,
so
you're in the background, but, you know, 9 times out of 10, especially nowadays, you're telling the doctor what the diagnosis is.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
now,
right.
Did you feel the pressure to go into primary care while you're in medical school?
Well, you know, back in the day, because you're a female, everybody thought that you're gonna be OBGYN. No.
Right. Right.
No. No. And I was correct, because OB was like the rotation I hated the most. Like, oh, I do not want to deliver a baby. No, it's not magical to me. It's not. You know, and that was fine. I knew I didn't want to do OB. Oh, no. But,
yourself,
you know, yeah. I knew that from early. No, I don't think I want to do that. Mm-mm. Nope. Nope. Yeah. But yeah, because, you know, back in the day as a female, they just think that, you know, you're going to do peds, or you're going to do OBGYN or
right.
That kind of stuff. And, no.
That's so true.
And there's a push for African-Americans in general to do primary care, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you talk, I know when I was in medical school, I felt that pressure, and others have said it as well. So, you know, but you have to know yourself, and you have to, you know, carve your own path despite what other people say or what other people think you ought to do.
Exactly, so exactly.
Because exactly, you're the one that's going to have to do it. Like, no one else
right.
is going to do it for you. Like, you're the one that's actually going to be doing the thing that you choose, so you should choose the thing that you want to do. It's
Absolutely. And you have to still love it at 50 and 60.
Exactly.
Okay. Because there are just so many people that are just hating what they do for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. You know,
burnout.
They don't feel like they're adequately compensated. You know, they work too much. There's just too much other stuff going on as opposed to what they really love to do, which is interacting with patients. You know, and they get burnt out, you know. You know, the practice of radiology has changed tremendously in the last 25 years.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about how it's changed in the last, like, 5 or 10 years. It's always changing.
Yeah. It's always changing. I mean, I came through when there were still Rotoviewers. We're still hanging films. Okay.
Me and Travis would have not made it through if we were still hanging films.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know. So they were hanging films when I came through.
Yeah.
You know, so just the whole PAX and image archiving and, you know, made us way more efficient.
Yeah.
Way more faster.
Exactly. More flexible.
And you don't lose films. I mean, we used to lose films, like, you know, 10% of the films taken that year were lost. Oh, they're in the OR. Why are the films in the OR? You know, so we were losing money because you couldn't keep up with the films. But now everything is archived. Everything is on, you know, it's imaged. It's in the cloud.
Exactly.
You know, so things have really, really changed.
That's so good. I mean,
what do you love most about it? You've seen the you know, the whole spectrum. You've seen it evolve over the last, you know.
Yes, I have. Because when I came out, at least in the D.C. metro area, there were three or four options, you know, to work. As a Black female, you know, you had the main groups. You had Weena Boyle, Grover Christie Merritt. These were old white groups from years and years and years, and they didn't take Black females. They barely took females.
Flat out.
Okay. Wow.
And you had those large groups that controlled a lot of the hospitals. Then you could work for like a Kaiser. I'm not sure if Kaiser was around then. They probably were. You could work for a Kaiser, or you can be an academic. But the options for African Americans was very limited
at that time,
even in the 80s.
Wow.
Okay.
It wasn't that long ago.
It was limited. It was not that long ago. Mm-hmm. But with HMOs and the way management changed, reimbursement changed how radiology was practiced. A lot of that he had a lot of mom and pop small practices.
Yeah.
You may have a solo practice or maybe two or three man group. You know, somebody, I know, I remember Dr. Davis, he was a radiologist at Howard. He was one of our attendings. You know, he had the contract for DC jail. Okay. So you could make it out on your own back then with just a small little office.
Not anymore.
But things change.
Yeah.
You know, so with right now you have a lot of private equity money in the game. And you have a lot, you have a situation where, you know, non-radiologists and non-physicians are controlling your destiny. And we're becoming a commodity.
That's right.
But it's a double-edged sword, though. Because you don't have the situation where you go into a group, you're expected to stay there 10 or 20 years, and everybody protects you. You know, you try to maximize your yield. You know, you come in and you're like, okay, well, your first year, you know, this you know, 3 to 5 years of partnership, and you know, you don't have, you're not locked in anymore. And with so many choices in radiology, you can work from home, you can work overnight, you can work 1 week on, 2 weeks off, you can work 1 week on, 1 week off, you can work in the hospital, you can do outpatient.
Yes.
All those options weren't available when I came out because we didn't have PACS.
Exactly, exactly. You physically have to go to the hospital, hang the film.
Right, everybody had to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. So now you're in a situation where there's a radiology shortage, and, you know, I'm seeing the compensation packages increase in amount over the last 10 years, mm-hmm. you know, because 10 years ago, the daily rate was $1,500, $1,700. Mm-hmm. Now the daily rate is creeping up to $2,500 because you can't get anybody to work in the hospitals anymore.
That's right.
Everybody wants to work from home. You know, everybody wants to maximize that flexibility.
Yeah.
And so although we don't have the camaraderie like we had back in the day, you go into a radiology department. 9 times out of 10, everybody in that radiology department has been together all their lives. It was like a family.
Yes, ups and downs, everything together. Exactly.
When I went down to my first job was with Dr. Fu in La Plata, Maryland, Physicians Memorial Hospital, small 40-bed hospital in La Plata, Maryland. Everybody in that department had been together.
Yeah.
Their entire life, all the techs. Everybody knew it was like a family. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Dr. Fu was from Taiwan, and they just loved Dr. Fu. And he was a part of the medical staff, and he was well-respected.
Yes.
And anything anybody did to Dr. Fu, they defended him. Mm-hmm. You know, so you always were walking into that kind of situation. You know, I used to work at St. Mary's Hospital, the same thing. Calvert Hospital, the same thing. Mm-hmm. Now things are completely different.
Yeah.
No one knows anyone, huh?
Yeah. No, you walk into a department, they're no radiologist.
Yeah.
Everybody's reading remotely.
Yeah, and those people who work for the same group who have not met each other ever.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, the only person in the hospital is interventionalist. Okay, because mammo is done outpatient. Mm-hmm. And so you're coming down, and back in the day, you know, you rounded in radiology. Mm-hmm. So you got to know the clinicians. You got to know the residents. You know, you talked about the patients. You know, it was a learning opportunity. You don't, none of that now. That's all gone.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. No, then
I
experienced that in medical school, and it was, you know, that experience, I love that. You know, when you're learning, you have a whole team come down, the surgeon's asking you, everybody's asking you, what do we do and what is this and what should be our approach? And that was a great experience, but that is gone. I mean, you'll get a phone call, you'll get a text message, but, you know, you don't get that face-to-face time, that consult anymore.
Exactly. Yes. You know, and that held the medical staff together because you felt like you depended on each other and everybody was in it together.
Right.
You know, now it's, you know, I don't want to say it's obscene, but it's kind of obscene. Because now, you know, nobody goes to the medical staff. Nobody wants to go to the medical staff meetings. Nobody wants to go to the galas. They just want to go home.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, So the way radiology is, you know, the way it's moving, it's just very, very different from the way it was when I came through.
That makes sense.
And that part of that's kind of the unfortunate part, you know.
That
was the kind of glue that held the medical staff together.
Yeah, not just the medical staff.
Nowadays, Yeah, and you don't, and you know, nowadays the radiologists, they, you know, it's like dog eat dog. They don't protect you. You know, one group comes in and they do this little song and dance to the medical, you know, to the higher ups. Oh, we're going to do this and it's going to be great. We're going to save you all this money and we're going to get you these, you know, mm-hmm. subspecialty reads and blah, blah, blah. But they don't tell you that we're going to completely, all the guys that are there now, we're firing.
Yeah.
Because we don't need them.
Yeah.
Because we have somebody remote already ready to take over this department.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. No, that's the thing with radiology. It's the thing that comes with the technology. You know, like the technology has positives and has negatives. But I guess in the words of Fat Joe, yesterday's price is not today's price. Like you said.
True. So,
yeah. But.
True.
Yeah. No, we really.
But you
really,
know, I'm just happy that I was telling somebody the other day. I am skiing down the backside of the mountain now.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
Congratulations to getting to that side.
Yeah.
Please take
Absolutely.
Pictures.
I'm waving. Listen. I'm waving back to you guys. Okay, guys. You guys can handle it.
Oh, it's a bone. Dangle that carrot. How does it feel?
Exactly.
I don't think I would want to come out now. I'm glad that I came out when I came out and kind of saw the change and transition. I was out when radiology was wonderful, when, you know, going to work was awesome, you know. I mean, it still is in a way, but with the way radiology is being practiced, you know, because when I first got to PG, because I was at PG, you know, level 2 trauma center, lots of films, lots of sick patients. But again, it was a family. Mm-hmm. The people at the front desk had been there 30 years. They remembered me when I was a student, moonlighting. When I was a resident moonlighting from Howard. I said, you still here?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Dr. Sadu had been in the department for 30 years.
Yeah.
So when we came in, it was 6 of us. You know, we were there together every day. And you become a family.
Exactly.
Now it's just,
it's different.
You know, so I'm kind of glad that I came through when I came through. I'll probably work another 10 years, and then that's it for me, you know.
Oh, it's all good.
So,
I mean, you made it through. I mean, that's a whole career that you've made it through.
Like,
that's amazing, you know. You made it through one whole career. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And I had, you know, I did move around a lot. You know, I usually typically stay about 10 to 12 years in one place, and then there's a transition, you know, and I kind of fall into the next transition and hang out for another 10 years. And there's another transition, you know.
But it sounds like you've been blessed to stay local here too.
Yes. Oh, I love DC. I wouldn't live anywhere else.
Yeah. So that means,
you know, but, you know, for folks coming in, you know, trying to go to medical school, like I said, know yourself. You know, don't do it for anybody else other than you.
You got that right.
It's okay to change your mind. Okay. Mm-hmm. Change your specialty. It's okay. You know, if you find that it's not for you, it's okay.
That is okay.
You know, because the last thing you want to do is waste time. You don't want to waste time because you don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, and you don't want to be wasting time doing a lot of something you don't like. So.
Right. If you don't enjoy it, you're not looking forward to it. If you are not excited about it, if it doesn't hold your interest, then whatever it is, don't do it, because, you know, the goal is longevity. The goal is the long game. And
the goal
you
is
know,
Dr.
this
Kim
is
Cowood. That's the goal.
That's right.
That's the goal. I mean, we really appreciate you being here with us. And You know, I'm going to get you out on this I'm going to get you here. Let me get you out on this last question. It's not even a question, actually. Unless Travis has a question. Do you have an actual question?
No, just good comments about the lovely energy Dr. Colwood has.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. I'm digging it. Yeah, we don't believe that you're on the backside of your career, but we...
No,
not at all. We think it's a lie, actually. But I'm just going to give you two words, and I just want you to give us a little bit of information about it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Zulu ball.
Oh, the Zulu ball. Yes. Listen, so my medical school dorm was on Canal Street.
That doesn't even sound
okay.
Right.
Okay. So I can look out my window, and on Mardi Gras Day, you know, the parade would go up and down Canal Street.
Correct.
Okay. So I'd never been to a Zulu ball, but I'm familiar with the Zulus.
Yes.
I'm familiar with the Zulus. And as a matter of fact, the carnival in the Virgin Islands in St. Thomas, they have a Zulu troop too.
It's very similar.
Yes. Very similar. Okay, what's the second word?
Oh, that was it. Zulu and ball.
That was it. Zulu ball.
Yeah.
That was it. No, because, you know, like I learned a lot about New Orleans, you know, recently, just like as far as like the African-American, you know, history and the culture, and the Zulu ball was like a African-American parade that was like under the bridge because they had like segregated parades, you know, during Mardi Gras. So
yeah.
One of my best friends, he was, you know, he went to Tulane for undergrad, but we'd always, actually he was at Tulane for residency as well. So we go down there and hang out with him at Zulu ball. Big shout out to Joseph Fouché. And I just learned a lot about, you know, African-American culture in New Orleans, and very, very rich history there.
Yes. I was so attracted, you know, New Orleans is one of my favorite places, because, you know, when I left Tulane, I would always find myself going back to the Jazz Fest.
Jazz Fest, yes.
And you know, hanging out in New Orleans, hanging out on Bourbon Street. You know, I had to get my fix every couple of years.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and like I said, I'm so fortunate that I was able to experience New Orleans before Katrina.
Exactly.
You know, because New Orleans was its people. It's the people that made New Orleans.
Correct.
And the people were so warm. You know, the ladies in the cafeteria were like, "Hi, baby, you want some red beans and rice?"
Let me tell you, all right.
That's right.
Okay.
And look it up.
And, oh, wow. You know, it was so rich and so warm. The food was very similar to the Caribbean food, you know, New Orleans was so beautiful, you know. Absolutely. So, you know, every step of the way I've had some just excellent experiences, you know, just looking back, it's just been awesome. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I think overall medicine is still great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still have a lot of issues. I think we can do things a lot more different. I think in this country, you know, things are guided by money and greed, unfortunately. But I think we still can do and help people and make changes in their lives and impact people's lives, you know.
Yeah.
And it's still a noble profession. And if somebody really feels like they can make a difference, you know, please, by all means,
I have a couple questions for you. Last two questions, Dr. Cole, from me. One, can you tell me what was one of the great things you loved about your residency at Howard? And two, can you tell us why it needs to come back, why it needs to be, you know, reinstated, and why we need a Howard radiology residency?
So I went from GW to Tulane I did my internship at Sinai Hospital in Baltimore. And actually, Sinai Hospital in Baltimore had a radiology residency program. It had ended the year before I got there. But of course, there's nothing like going to the Mecca now. There's nothing like going to the Mecca. You know, the radiology department at Howard, you know, was awesome. You were learning in a very nurturing environment. Okay. They're like, look, we're going to take you on this journey. And at the end, you're going to pass these boards. Because you're not going to make us look bad, okay?
I heard that.
That's right. Oh, that's so good.
That's exactly okay. Right, and, but again, it was very nurturing. It was great to be in an environment where, you know, African Americans were making a difference in an environment of excellence. Everybody's striving to do well, very supportive. And so that was an awesome experience. And I'm fortunate. I'm glad that they accepted me. And I was able to pass my board, so you know. It was heart wrenching when I heard we lost the accreditation, lost the program. You know, we really need to have a residency program where you're putting out excellent Black radiologists. Because, you know, in the majority programs, you may have one every 4 years.
Right.
Okay. Exactly. Most of the African-American radiologists I know came through Howard.
Yeah.
And they're all excellent radiologists. And I was so disappointed when I heard that we lost the program, you know. Mm-hmm. And we have been trying to get it back. I know Dr. Bonnie Davis, who's the chairman over there now,
right,
worked very, very hard to try and get this program back. It's hard to get a program back.
It is.
But, you know, Adventist has partnered, quote unquote, partnered with Howard.
Correct.
So they're going to bring some new ways of doing things to that Howard medical community.
It's needed.
And I hope it's going to be positive, and I hope they will be able to bring back the residency program. It's needed. We need to have that. We just need to have that department. We need to have that source.
Absolutely.
Of you know, training African American radiologists along with a lot of the other specialties that the hospital lost.
The hospital
lost a whole slew of residency programs.
Yeah, it wasn't just radiology, and it's extremely
unfortunate. We need to get that back. So I enjoyed it when I was a student and did my rotation there, and I spent 4 years there. And it was an awesome experience. There are excellent teachers, excellent professors, excellent attending, you know, but it was all in an atmosphere of, cause you know, in majority programs, you know, things tend to get cutthroat.
Oh yeah.
You know, things you know, you don't feel, you know what I'm saying, you just don't feel like,
yeah, how do I describe it
yeah, well,
you just don't feel supported and nurtured.
At
Howard you felt supported and nurtured.
Absolutely.
You know, And what was the second question?
Well, you kind of answered it because I wanted to know what you loved about it and then why we needed it. Why we need it back.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. We need it. We need to get it back. We need to get it back. Hopefully they'll put some things in place that will, you know, hopefully pave the road to be able to really, you know, make an effort to get it back. Because there, you know, Howard has a lot of challenges, mm-hmm. a lot of challenges. And if we can get those challenges overcome, a lot of the African-American physicians in the community would support.
Definitely.
Okay. They would support it. And they're willing, ready, able to support.
Yeah, especially,
but they have to get some fundamentals back in order.
Exactly.
And hopefully with Adventists, and what they can bring to the table, hopefully, you know, we can tighten up the systems in place, tighten that up so we can then, you know, circle back and get some of these residency programs back.
Yes.
So that would be great. That would be great.
No, we would love that, and you know we're going to be following closely and helping out as much as we can to help that make that happen. So, but
awesome.
Yeah, we really appreciate you being here with us today, and you know telling us your whole story, and yeah, I think it's an inspiration to everyone. You know, like this is
absolutely.
This is just an amazing story. So we really, really appreciate you being here with us, and yeah, we'll definitely be in contact, and you know, we'll do this again, hopefully.
Sure. Let me know. Just let me know. Keep in touch.
Will do.
All right, will do. All right, Dr. Caldwell.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
And till next time, stay low and keep firing.
Keep firing, baby.